The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Never fuck with the king.
Disaster, like eating a burrito before sex.
Happy New Year, horror fans and listeners, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 44, our Valentine's Day episode. That Valentine's Day episode 3, Beauty is Only Skin Deep. So we say hello to February, the month that celebrates not only Black history, but love, and also women in horror. Hashtag women in horror. Tonight, by my side, is the love doctor himself, the one and only Chris Koenig. How are you doing, sir? Have you seen any good movies lately? Did you start Ash vs. Evil Dead?
No, I didn't get to do all those things yet because I have been doing what I have always been doing ever since we started this podcast. How many years ago was it? 4 or 5 years ago, I think?
We're starting our sixth season, so yeah, a little over five.
Yeah,
four.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing what I've always been doing.
Well,
working.
Working. Well, we've also been recording for... Well, two plus years before that too with Cleverpod.
So, oh yeah. yeah, but I was kind of keeping that as a separate like.
Oh yeah.
Not saying that I disown those. I don't. But I'm saying like That's more like a separate entity. You know, that was back when we were just, you know, young and full of piss and vinegar, and now we have kind of grown battle hardened, and you know, for us it's just kind of easy. Like I always say, we just turn the microphones on and. Speak, say words, and hopefully we've got an episode. So, I know I mentioned it before, but you ever think about it? How like back then when it was just you, me, and Dave, the frustrations we've had trying to like get just one episode off the ground. You know?
Yes. I remember all the audio issues we also had with recording and, you know, his kitchenette.
Yeah, his we should have called it the dungeon, even though it was just a kitchen. But
it was even a full kitchen. It was like a half a kitchen.
Yeah, but the good thing, though, is he did have drinks, so it always helped, you know?
Yes, well, but that's another story for another day.
Yes. But anyways, no, not much has been going on with me. I actually had a very nice Christmas with Ma. New Year's was okay, but I've mostly been just doing what I've always been doing, working, keeping myself going, and I actually, you know what, it's kind of strange, during the beginning of the new year, you want to talk about way to start off the new year, I was not feeling very good at all for some reason. I was like, my stomach was killing me for like a whole week. I'm like, oh my god, we'll talk about like a really shitty way to start off the, 2020. But after that, you know, it got, you know, things cleared up a little bit. And then, you know, we didn't quite get any raging winter storms out here, too. So that's, but knock on wood, you know, that it doesn't happen. But besides that, again, not much has been going on with me. How about you? How's things going at La Casa Casda these days?
Oh, it is fantastic. It is a winter wonderland over here still in the Great White North. No, we've got some snow still up here in Minnesota. It's not as bad as it has been in the last 2 years. It's our third winter here, so it's been much better. We still got some snow though. We still are going sledding. We just went sledding last weekend, and we plan on hopefully going tubing in Wisconsin in next week, and that's always a lot of fun. But yeah, same thing here. December and January were jam-packed to the gills with, gosh, a lot of stuff. Outdoor activities, like I was saying, like sledding and tubing. But yeah, it's nice to get back into kind of like the swing of things and no more holidays for a while and kind of like find that your old pace again. But other than that, I'm just happy to be back recording with you guys. Just happy to be back recording with you again. doing what we do here at THSP. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because we were talking before we began how, you know, we have Valentine's Day coming up and for this show, and like all holiday-themed horror movies, it's really getting difficult to find something to fill in for this type of subject.
After you get away from like the big ones, like the remake of My Bloody Valentine, 3D, or and then My Bloody Valentine from 1981, and then you know Valentine with that movie we reviewed last year. Yeah, it starts to get a little bit scarce.
Yeah,
it's not completely. There's still about a handful of movies. I'd say maybe about three or four still, but not a lot.
So in other words, we didn't really think this through, actually.
Oh no, we're good for at least another few seasons.
Okay. Oh thank God. Thank God.
So we got season 6, season 7, and possibly season 8.
All right.
We'll just wedge something else in there, yeah. or do a best of retrospective. Valentine's Day episode where we cover everything we've previously recovered.
Yeah, or we can do a non horror movie. We can do a nice chick flick for our female listeners out there if they're so inclined. Well, I don't know. I have trepidations over that. But
for season 8, Chris will be reviewing The Notebook and
Oh God, no! Don't do this to me, please.
You asked for it.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a solo show, I guess.
Chris, one mic.
I don't know. I was thinking about that. Maybe I could pull it off. I don't know, but but anyways, no. It's just been very, very. It's been a little difficult trying to come up with titles. But you know what? That's the great thing about this show because Tim here managed to find one that never occurred to me, primarily because I never saw this one until recently.
And because it probably went by 45 different titles.
Yeah, well, I think it's just two, but anyways, and we'll get to it, but, you know, Tim said, I think we can do this one, and I watched it, and I said, well, good enough, so...
Ooh, yeah.
As a quick prelude here, probably not the best of them, that's for sure, but...
So without giving too much away right now, Chris, what would you say was a better film, Valentine's Day from last year or from last season, or this film? Without giving too many spoilers, giving too much away right now.
God,
it wasn't Valentine's Day. It was Valentine.
Yeah. Well, Valentine's just sucks in general, but both the movie and the holiday. But anyways, sorry, folks, I just had to say that. But I think the movie we're reviewing now is a little more entertaining for its completely over the top weirdness, but you know, like not even like by a country mile. So it's hard for me to say. I mean, if I had to break it down. The movie we're going to be talking about, I think, in comparison, would be better than Valentine. That's for sure. But that's so, like not saying a lot, you know.
Cue the drum roll. Brrr. Tonight we'll be reviewing X-Ray, aka Hospital Massacre, from 1981. So a happy Valentine's Day, you sexy bitches!
Oh boy.
Yes. Now, okay. So. Full disclosure.
This feels like right. A date that is going to be going horribly wrong in any minute now.
Uh-oh. Before we get to that, I'd also like to add that, you know, these past few months I've been battling various allergies and colds that I have had when we were either recording Men of Letters or right here on THSP. So if you've heard my heavy breathing in the background thinking, is that Darth Vader or something? No, that was just me and my allergies in the microphone not getting along.
I actually thought it was you breathing through an oxygen mask for some reason.
Yeah. So, my many apologies. I'm currently on some brand new meds and trying out a new mic placement. So hopefully that'll work. Anyway, with that out of the way, Chris, you want to light the fires and kick the tires with our film?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's go ahead and talk Hospital Massacre or X-Ray or whatever the fuck title this movie is, to say the truth.
But before we do that, let's take our quick commercial break from the Speakeasy Podcast Network, and then we'll roll that trailer for X-Ray. We'll be right back after this with Chris's synopsis, so hang tight. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Tim.
And I'm Katie.
And this is 60 Minutes.
No, it's not.
It isn't? Then what are we doing, jerk?
It's Men of Letters, bitch, a supernatural retrospective podcast.
Yes, so we'll gas up the old Impala and you'll ride shotgun with us as we cruise the highways and byways of America with Sam, Dean, and Baby.
We'll discuss every episode, every monster. We'll even look under your bed, in your closets for the supernatural.
Well, maybe not that last one, Katie. You never know what may be under there or in there, but be sure to tune in to Men of Letters over at the Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Where talk is cheap, and so are we.
So don't be a jerk or a bitch. Listen to Men of Letters, a supernatural retrospective podcast.
And we'll see you all down the road. And oh, you guys, don't forget to bring the pie.
Okay, Chris, take it away, sir.
All right. We are talking X-Ray from 1981, also known as Hospital Massacre. Hey, great title there. Directed by Boaz Davidson and written by Mark Bim and Boaz Davidson. It should come as no surprise to horror fans that Valentine's Day themed slasher horror is a tough concept to sell. For me, the bottom line is this. If you can combine both the holiday theme with slash and stab horror, the results can either be well done and entertaining, or tasteless and schlocky. In other words, you can get a fair share of the good, the bad, and the ugly. In the case of X-Ray, it leans more towards the bad and the ugly, and very little of anything remotely good. Seriously, folks, the best one by far is My Bloody Valentine, both the original and the remake. And the worst by far is, yep, you guessed it, Valentine. X-Ray leans very close to Valentine, and really just can't hold a candle to My Bloody Valentine, either version. However, X-Ray is a whole other beast in itself. Watching this movie gives the impression that it's from some alternate universe in which bad writing, dumb plotting, and questionable directing somehow equal a quality production. And, since this was produced by the now legendary Menachem Golem and Yoram Globus of Canon Films fame, I guess we really shouldn't be too surprised by the outcome. So then, X-Ray opens on none other than... Are you ready for it? You ready? Valentine's Day! Ah, man, I bet you didn't see that.
Shocker.
So, oh, my God. Mind blown, okay? Shock and awe. You know, man, I bet you didn't see that little detail coming, did you? Oh, wait, you did. Okay. No surprise there, I guess, considering that the opening takes place in a living room with various red paper cutouts of hearts all displayed over a fireplace as if the setting were the Christmas holidays. Anyways, it's Valentine's Day, and we see two little kids, Susan and David, sitting on the living room floor and playing with an electric train. Outside the front door is little Harold, who leaves a Valentine's Day card for Susan. Aw. Sadly for Harold, it seems Susan and David find this act of love to be nothing short of hysterical, and Susan crumples the card up in disgust. Harold witnesses this heartbreaking moment, see what I did there, through the main window, and is all down in the dumps. But soon, that depression quickly turns into full on rage of the 10-year-old kind, and Harold isn't taking this shit lying down. Susan proceeds to walk into the kitchen, grab a really big knife, and cut a piece of Valentine's Day cake for herself. Man, is it just me, or does this opening scene really overstate the fact that it's Valentine's Day? I mean, the paper cutouts of hearts is one thing, but a cake with Happy Valentine's Day written on it? That's just too much for this movie. And speaking of too much, when Susan arrives in the living room, she finds David is dead and his poor body hanging on a hat rack. Man, love is rough, and Valentine's Day just really blows. But that's not the end of the movie, folks, so stick with it. 19 years pass, and Susan, played by Barbie Benton, who is pretty much the only good performer in this mess of a movie, who now has a daughter and an asshole ex-husband on her belt, heads off to the local hospital to get her test results for her insurance. Her new boyfriend Jack drives her to the hospital, and, well, wouldn't you know it, it's Valentine's Day! Wow, what a shocker! And guess what? Some psycho dressed up in a lab coat and surgical mask is there and proceeds to knock off some of the nurses and doctors. Oh, and he also kills a low-level janitor as well. The killer proceeds to mix up Susan's test results so the doctors can keep her at the hospital as they fear she has a life-threatening illness. And while Susan has to deal with all this hullabaloo in regards to her questionable diagnosis, the killer has some plans of his very own to carry out towards Susan. Yeah, folks, that's X-Ray. In a nutshell, almost.
Wow, you said a mouthful there.
I know, but, you know, what do you do with a movie that's not that great? You know, you just try to find some virtue in it somewhere. So, yeah, I've never seen Hospital Massacre or X-Ray, whichever title it wants to go under.
Right, I was also known as two other titles as well. Before the commercial break, briefly mentioned it. It was also known as Ward 13.
Hmm.
Or my personal favorite was Be My Valentine or Else. I think that is a fantastic
title. They should have kept that title. That would have been great. Or at the very least, take that title and turn that into a Valentine's-themed horror movie, you know?
It's a little long, but I think
it doesn't
work.
It's okay. Come on. It's like, that title is... Yeah, that works, actually. It's like, yeah.
Be my Valentine or else. Sounds very threatening.
Yeah. It sounds like it really wants to drag you into seeing the movie. It's threatening you to be its Valentine or else the movie's going to kill you. So, I'm serious, though. Someone should take that title and make it into a Valentine's horror movie, okay? So that way we can have another horror movie to review for Valentine's Day.
We can just review this same one and just put the alternate title on it.
We just gave away our secret. Ooh. Don't say anything. But
tune in for season 10.
Yeah. But no, it's you know, the idea of it is actually not bad. It's just the execution of it is just really awful. And there's just so many weird things that happen in this movie. It's like it's hard to process, actually, because I think on a certain level, it feels like it should have been a comedy, considering the amount of weird humor that pops up in this movie. But at the same time, the filmmakers are trying to be serious with it. And it's like, it just doesn't gel very well. It has this, like, you really can't tell what director Boaz Davidson was trying to do here. It just feels so disjointed and like too loose, you know.
And you made mention that everything is like over the top and like very out there, like with the cutouts of the paper hearts and the making sure everybody knew it was Valentine's Day. But I'd like to bring in the fact that little Susie, who's what, like at that point, what, 8, 12 years old,
yeah.
She goes into the kitchen. Her mother, because it was a throwaway line, her mother had made them a Valentine's Day cake, and she's going to go cut them a piece of cake. She pulls out the biggest fucking knife I've ever seen for a kid even to wield, let alone an adult. I mean, this thing looks like something that Jason could use in Friday the 13th to cut essentially a fucking birthday cake. I'm like, what is she doing with that large of a knife?
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because it's like the way how she pulls the knife out, pulls it out and she holds it with both hands and she raises it up like almost like Jason in a slasher movie.
Yeah,
and
like
then
she's gonna murder the cake.
And then all of a sudden she brings it down quick and then stops and then starts moving slowly and cuts the piece of the cake. And that's what I'm talking about. It's like like that shot totally works as something in a comedy, but in this movie, it just feels like okay, I laughed at it, but it's like, but is this supposed to have a serious tone, or you know, because the whole movie is supposed to have this serious streak throughout it, but there's just way too many weird moments, and everything is so overstated. You know, like real quick, you know, the opening sequence where it takes place at Susan's mother's house, where these two kids are playing. They're just sitting on the floor playing with a train, and the house is like literally decorated like with the cutout hearts and everything.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you know, I mean, you could have easily told us it's Valentine's Day just by the young kid Harold dropping off a Valentine's Day car. He didn't have to like show us hearts and shit.
You know what they could have done is just a close-up of a calendar with, you know, February 14th
with
a heart on it. But as you're saying, overstated and overstating things. And honestly, if they really wanted to, like, really create a red herring and do something for a flashback, this would have been a perfect opportunity where little Susie grabs a big old knife and she's cutting. You add some really demented, weird music into it, and you show it in a flash frame type. It makes her look psycho.
Yeah. But, you know, the other thing is that what I find funny about this is the whole opening sequence with Harold giving, you know, Susan this, you know, the card. Mm-hmm. And then when she gets it, they, you know, she just crumples it up and throws it on the floor. And, you know, in Valentine, that movie, when we have that opening sequence where we find out what happens to this kid who becomes humiliated and no one likes the kid. So you get an idea of what's going on. We have no idea in this opening sequence exactly why Susan doesn't like Harold and why Harold likes Susan. There's like no specific setup. It's just he delivers the card, she gets it, crumples it up, throws it on the floor, you know, laughs, that's it. Harold gets upset, or at least we think he does, because it's just footage of him peering through a window. You know what I'm saying?
Well, here's the thing is when Susan goes into the kitchen to cut the cake, she hears a scuffle in the back in the living room.
Yeah,
and she keeps saying, "I forget what was the other kid's
name?" She's like, "What's, you know, something like stop making that noise here? Not stop making that noise, David."
David.
Yeah.
And but here is the thing is that she was literally gone for maybe what 10, 15, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
She comes back in there, and the hat rack or the hat stand,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it, is perfect. And yet it's got like some 90-pound kid hanging off of it.
I know, yeah. I mean, like, did...
That's a really hard kill to...
That's a stretch also, too, because there's no way that little kid Harold could lift that
Yeah,
kid,
there's no
the
way two 90-pound kids could, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's say they're both about 90 to 100 pounds, maybe.
Yeah, maybe if Harold saw a homeless man and asked him to come in the house and help him kill David and pick David up and pick him, you know, stick him on the hat rack, I probably would believe it, as absurd as that would sound.
Yeah,
but
there was no sound effect saying he got impaled by anything. It was
yeah.
He's just there hanging out.
Well, even later on, yeah. And later on in the movie, it's almost like there's no mention of, like, the death of David. You know, it's almost like he's just, like, a distant memory. Plus, what's David's connection? Is he Susan's brother? Or is he just, like, some friend? Does she like him more than Harold? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. There's no real setup. It's like,
yeah, it's not like you cut to him like they're like sharing an innocent kiss or something like that on the playroom floor, thinking that maybe there's something. They're not brother and sister. They're not related. They're not friends. They're more than friends, but they're still a very PGG relationship because they're young.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is like we don't know. Like I'm saying, like these characters, they're not even characters. It's like these kids just collided or they just happen to be in the same space. They occupy the same space, but there's nothing.
We're doing way too much thinking than what even the writers were thinking
about.
Well,
that's true too, but you know, this is what we talk about when we say, you know, you have like slasher movies that actually manage to like have some characters, like, you know, like in the case of My Bloody Valentine, the original and the remake, you know, the characters do interesting things in that movie. I mean,
there's a backstory. There's an actually fleshed out backstory.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're
no
not
how ludicrous it could possibly be.
Oh yeah,
Still there.
Yeah, I mean, they're not like they're not two or three dimensional characters. They're fairly one dimensional. But you have an idea of what they are, what they do, and you know their personalities. You know, even if they might be one dimensional, we know nothing about these. people in the opening sequence. The thing is that the Susan character is going to be the main character throughout the rest of the movie when she gets older, you know?
Is there something less than one-dimensional character? Because that's probably this would be.
Cardboard cutouts, maybe? I mean, and folks, listen, I know it sounds like, you know, we're really delving into this and picking it apart too much, but again, it's like what I'm talking about. It's like the movie has this weird factor all over it where not everything comes together.
And Chris, that's Chris, we're not even in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
I know, and we're already, like, criticizing the... who are these characters? Why are these kids here? What?
we're literally in the opening sequence before they roll the actors' names and director.
No. The credits came before this.
Yeah.
So little David's dead. Susan screams. 19 years later, we're introduced to Susan, now played by Barbie Benton. She's all grown up.
Oh my God, boy, is she grown up.
Oh, is she grown up? I said, by far, as you were saying, by far, she's like literally the best performer in this movie. I mean, she actually does give it the old college try, you know.
But she's got a couple of great assets.
We'll get to that too. That I gotta say, I will give Boaz Davidson some credit. He did not disappoint right there. So, but everything else is a minus five here. And this is what I love about this sequence too. We're introduced to Susan. She's got a daughter, and she has an ex-husband. All right. And already it's like, you know, the ex-husband walks in, he's like just completely upset and cantankerous just to be near Susan. Susan doesn't want to have anything to do with this guy. And once again, we never find out exactly what it is about their relationship that fell apart. If you think about it.
Yeah. Again, not even a one-dimension character. They're like, he shows up with his daughter. They're out. She just walks outside her office building where she's working.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he says, "Can you take your daughter or whatever it is? I can't do it. I gotta go to a doctor. I gotta pick up some files.
And he's just
to my doctor's appointment, you know.
Yeah, and he's
my checkup.
And he's just angry the entire time.
And he's perturbed for some fucking reason because she said that he can't take her right now because apparently she's supposed to be dropped off like 4 or 5 hours later in the day. And, apparently that didn't work for him.
But what I love about it is that these characters, when they come into the scene, it just totally feels like not only do we not know anything about them, it feels like they don't know anything about each other, you know? It's like, imagine having three actors together, and you tell them to walk in and just do a scene. And not even as improv, just say, all right, you're the you're an ex-husband, you're the wife, you're the kid, just walk in.
Yeah. It just seems like basic acting 101.
It is, basic acting 101, but with no motivation.
Hi, Susan. Yeah. I am mad. Please take our daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
I must go now.
and I love how when she gets in her, car with her new boyfriend, he just says, he's an asshole and everything. But again, missed opportunities. It's like there should have been a scene where she gives a little bit of exposition to, her boyfriend,
her ex-husband is such a jerk.
Yeah, or like why she left him. Or that's the reason why she left him. I mean, like something. It's like we know nothing about these people.
It's just a race at this point to get Susan to the hospital.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Start.
It wastes no time, too. It's like once she gets in that car, boom, at the hospital. That's the one thing I will say Boaz Davidson does. Get her to the hospital. Get her in the building. Get the killer there. People get killed. Have her stalled. He succeeds on those levels, but everything else is like no substance at all.
No, it's zilch. It's like he's just trying to get from one kill to the other kill, and I know that's what slasher movies are, but it shouldn't feel that way.
Yeah, but even good slasher movies pull that off very well.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like it feels rushed. It feels like okay, time to go.
Yeah, yeah. The characters in a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie are like 10 times more fleshed out than these people.
And that's not saying a whole lot.
It's not saying a whole lot. No. Yeah.
Lewis movies and those were not fleshed out either.
Yeah,
My favorites are the detectives, and I think it was
Blood Feast. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Blood Feast.
Of course. Yeah. And I know
it feels like it should be Zach Galifianakis between two ferns because it's just that's what they had, the two flower pots.
I know. Yeah. Best. Yeah. Trying to figure out who the killer is, even though it's like right in front of their face the entire time.
Golly, Bob, I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I don't know, Jerry. What should we do? I don't know. Let's have a cigarette and think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But in that case of that movie, it still felt like you had like something going on. Yeah. but anyways, she arrives at the hospital, and there's this quick aside about how the husband says, hey, you're getting your test results here. Isn't this the hospital where, like, some madman was, like, killing people? And, Barry Benton's character kind of just does that whole chuckle and smile thing, like, oh, you.
That was years ago.
Yeah, that was years ago.
Guy.
and again, it just feels like, why is that being mentioned? So are they trying to say that the killer that's going to pop up in this movie killed people previously and then just happens to be here, or repeating the crimes all over again, or it, like I said, it just feels like that feels like a moment where somebody said, we have to have a line here, have him say something. Have the husband say, why are you here? There was a killer here before, wasn't there?
boyfriend, not husband.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, the husband. Boyfriend, yeah.
Not See, that it really fucking matters.
It doesn't. No, you could like totally switch the characters and they'd all be the same. And I love too when she gets out of the car.
Oh,
like the camera, it's a wide shot, and it goes for a close up of the window. And the killer, wearing the lab coat and the mask, is like staring out the window, like
almost like a Scooby Doo like type kind of like a call to action.
Yeah, yeah, like oh, she's here. Okay, good. All right, start right away.
Okay. it's like, even for the dumbest horror fans, hey, you're going to want to pay attention to this guy in the window.
Yeah, hey, just letting you know, it's like Boaz Davidson and say, okay, look, here's the threat, yeah. All right?
But I love how she goes, and she turns to her boyfriend in the car. She goes, not only be a minute, I'm just going to go pick up my test results.
Oh, my God, it's not even a minute, and he's sleeping out in the car later on.
Well, yeah, fast forward 6 hours later, he's asleep in the car. I'm like, if it was me, if my girlfriend, whatever it is, said that she's just running in for test results, and she hasn't come back in, let's say, what, an hour, hour and a half? It's something that should have taken, what, maybe 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I might get out of the car, go in there, and kind of take a poke around.
Yeah.
Fall asleep and wake up 7 hours later and realize, oh, my God.
And I love, too, when she goes inside, because once again, it's Valentine's Day, so you have, like, a banner in the background saying Happy Valentine's Day and everything. And then, again, you know, red herrings are red herrings, but when you overstate the red herrings, you're like sitting there going, yeah, okay, whatever. The janitor in this sequence, he's just like staring at her and, you know, tapping his fingers real loudly on the table while Susan's getting checked in. And then when she walks by him, he's like just stroking his mop with his hands and like cracking his knuckles.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I know, yeah. It's again, it's like, okay, we get it. You're trying to make this dude look creepy. You know, you could do some things a little less, you know, overstated. You know, sometimes subtlety works a little bit, you know, you never know. But
Now, is this before they send her to the wrong floor, or she gets on the wrong floor?
No. This is when she gets on the elevator, and she gets on the elevator. They tell her that it's on, like, the seventh floor or whatever, and she
ends up on the ninth floor somehow.
Oh, yeah, and I love it, too.
It was supposed to be the fourth floor. She ends up, like, on the ninth floor. She ends up, like, five floors away from where she's supposed to be.
Oh,
honestly.
Okay, yeah. Well, we think so. I mean, the logistics on this hospital are a little odd.
It really doesn't matter. And can we please just touch upon it at some point, the lighting in this hospital, because it's the worst.
Yeah, it's a little dim. Well, real quick, though, now again, whether this was trying to be, like, you know, a serious movie with humorous elements or, you know, a comedy with some serious elements, I love when she gets on the elevator and she ends up on the wrong floor, and she opens the door, and there's like three guys wearing gas masks because they're fumigating the ninth floor. And the way how the main guy talks to her with the gas mask on, he's just like, you know, he's like, he has to yell right through, but he's like, you're on the wrong floor, lady.
Get out of here before you want to be deloused or something. I don't.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, but the way how they did it, it's like three guys sticking their heads all the way through the elevator towards her. The way how it's framed, it looks like it should be in a fucking Tex Avery cartoon. I mean,
it's nice to know the Three Stooges had gotten some work after, you know.
Yeah. Except Mo, Larry, and Curly were much fun when they were younger. These guys. But so then she goes back down, and then all of a sudden the killer, which, by the way, luckily for him, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I need to go back to for a moment. Again, weird situations. She's in the elevator, and before she ends up on the ninth floor with the guys in the gas masks, there's a guy standing next to her who, I swear in God's name, and I'm not trying to be mean about this, the way how he acts, I thought this guy had, like, you know, like Down syndrome or a mental thing. Remember, he was standing next to her, and then all of a sudden she sees what looks like blood dripping on her shoes, and it turns out the guy's eating a hamburger, and when he's talking, he sounds just like he's got some kind of weird mental problem. But then later on in the movie, it turns out he's a patient, and he's, like, drinking.
Oh, is this the same guy that's wearing, like, the gown with a tie and drinking out of, like, a flask?
Yeah, and I'm like, why is he drinking? How is he getting away with this?
Okay. So I realize it's in the 80s. I realize it's like 1980, 1981. But are you really supposed to, if you're a patient, you're really supposed to be drinking?
Well, come on, dude. That was back when, you know, there was a law that you had to take cocaine. But, you know, and besides that.
Let's not even talk about, you know, all the smoking that's going on in all the different hospital rooms.
Well, that was different. You know, I miss the days where you could smoke in a bar. You know, and I remember working at a restaurant where, before they had the anti-smoking thing, where, you know, yeah, there were people smoking in the bar. But it's very weird how, you know, people in the doctor's lounge are smoking cigarettes and everything. But, you know, being a doctor and a nurse and a surgeon and a technician, that's a lot of hard work, you know. You gotta have that smoke break once in a while.
yeah, especially during open heart surgery, you know.
Oh, no one's ever done that before. I mean, if you're saying during open heart surgery, if you're saying afterwards, okay, fine, but during.
In the room, the anesthesiologist is lighting up.
Completely unsterile, Tim. Completely unsterile. Put that cigarette near the sterile field. That'll work out just fine. But
all the flammable stuff that's floating in the air, it's okay.
Oh, my God. But anyways, back to when she's going back down in the elevator, you know, the killer just happens to pull the right switch to stop that elevator from moving and trapping her. Talk about convenience.
Now, talk about timing as well.
I know. Dude, this dude just knows the hospital backwards and forwards. So, and then, now, the doctor that Susan has to see is a female doctor, which is very interesting, too. What I find also interesting is the fact that for the ninth floor that's being fumigated, you would think everybody in the hospital that's part of the team would know that. But the female doctor in this movie gets a page over the intercom saying that she is needed on the ninth floor.
Was that the same floor? I couldn't remember if that was the same floor. I realized that one of the floors was also under construction, too.
Yeah, no, that's right? The same. No, that's the same floor,
the same floor. Okay.
Which is interesting, because when you see the way how it's laid out, it looks like it's under construction.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The first one, that's why I wasn't paying really a close attention to the floors where she told her to go. But when I didn't see, like, the fumigating stuff, I just saw more, it was like, under construction, or they had, you know, it was more of a storage area. I'm like, oh, well, that must be a different floor. You know, I mean, you know, maybe it's the 11th floor, maybe it's the 12th floor. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah. But she ends up there, and of course, the masked killer kills her, stabs her to death, and then eventually, the killer then turns the power back on in the elevator, and then Susan has managed to get off on the right floor.
but not before the killer goes into the doctor's office, the one that he just killed, and doctor the test results of Susan.
Yeah. And then, of course, Susan's outside waiting for the doctor to show up. Oh, and by the way, once again, we get another kill sequence. We get the janitor who goes on the ninth floor, and he does find the doctor's body. And then the killer takes the janitor and shoves his head in a sink that has, like, some kind of acid in it or whatever. And I'm like, why is there acid in the sink, man? What's going on here?
And if the acid was that corrosive, wouldn't it have eaten through most of the sink to
begin with? I would have thought that too, you know?
If it's harmful enough to, you know, to melt someone's face off.
Well, did you ever watch the show Breaking Bad?
Yes.
Do you remember the part where what's the character? Was it Jesse? He tries to put the body in the bathtub.
Bathtub or corrodes and it falls. Yeah,
it falls to the floor after Bryan Cranston's character tells him that's why you're supposed to put it in a plastic container. Like they did in the previous one, and of course Jesse is too stupid to pay the fuck attention, you know.
Realism.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, again, in this type of movie, you know, whatever. So, and talk about more weird moments. There's a scene in here where Susan tries to make a phone call to her ex-husband, and her ex-husband is sitting on a couch cutting up an orange with a knife, and the way how he's doing it, you know, makes it look like, you know, oh, maybe her ex-husband could be the killer because of the way how he keeps twisting that knife in the orange.
And the way he doesn't want to talk to her and how that, and then it's further amplified a few scenes later where she calls and she gets the daughter, and the daughter had fallen asleep on the couch.
Yeah.
Or no, the daughter to answer the phone. I'm sorry. Maybe it woke her up. I forget exactly what. Oh, daddy went out for a while. He said he'd be back soon.
Yeah.
So now he has left the apartment or left the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, like you said, yet another red herring. Yeah, this movie is just completely bananas. And I think and I was watching this movie Saturday night, last Saturday, and I'm texting actually Mark Risman. He's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm watching X-Ray." He's like, "Oh, what's that?" And like, I told him, he goes, "Oh, that Valentine's Day movie." I'm like, "Yeah." And then about a day later, he texts me back. He goes, "Man, I know you got your Valentine's Day episode coming up." I'm like, "Yep." He was like, "This could have been a spinoff or a sequel to My Bloody Valentine."
Oh, it could have.
With all the Harry Wardens running around.
I know, yeah. Well, so, and also, now again, this movie is just peppered with so much weird moments and, like, overstatements and everything. Like, when she gets off the payphone in there, there's, like, this nurse, this male nurse standing behind her with this full beard. He looks like...
He looks angry at her.
He looks angry at her, and he looks like he should... Like, he looks like some dude that they just picked up out of nowhere and said, "Here, put this scrubs on and look like you're working here." He looks like he shouldn't be working there. He looks like he should be working in a pizza parlor somewhere or something.
Right. It's like almost like a prison, like,
or a Greek restaurant. There. He looks like he could be working at a Greek restaurant, man. This movie, oh my god! You know, I thought we weren't going to have anything to talk about with this movie, but thank God we do.
Because we're only about a third of the way through.
Oh yeah, yeah, but
we haven't gotten to the good shit yet.
Yeah. So then she meets up this doctor named Harry, who. It turns out he's... Harry Ward. No. Harry, it's just Harry. But I guess he says he's technically an intern, or he's, like, studying medicine, or... Because at one point he mentions he's an intern, so... Which,
oh, perfect. You know nothing, then. Give me a nurse, then.
Yeah. So, well, no, I mean, like, she goes to him and asks him for help, so he's able to get her into the doctor's office, and when he takes a look at the X-ray file, and it looks like she's got, like, because the killer switched her original X-ray with a different X-ray, it looks like she's got, like, some weird problem in her stomach or something. I mean, we never find out what it is, because even these doctors are pretty much clueless as to what it's about. So, you know, Harry kind of is a little concerned, so he says, let's... You know, he says we need to find an MD to sign off on the report. Because he's an intern. So, they go to another doctor, Dr. Saxon, who takes a look at the file, and then takes a look at the X-ray, and then says, "Oh, this doesn't look right. You're going to have to stay here while we do some more tests."
Yeah, okay, Dr. Rapey.
So, we should talk about this one particular scene where the doctor, Dr. Saxon character... decides that he has to do a physical examination of her. So, yeah, I know. This sequence literally is like... It feels...
So many lawsuits in real life.
So many lawsuits. I mean, it looks like there's one thing he's doing right, but at the same time, everything else is being done wrong. So he has her go change into, like, you know, the patient gown. In the
He's
other...
like, "Strip, we need to be naked."
Yeah, but I love too when another doctor shows up, the surgeon shows up, his name is Dr. Dr. Bem, yeah, talk about a good name, Dr. Bem, who, you know, he just kind of waltzes in and says, "What's going on here?" And then Dr. Saxon just motions his head and says, "Take a look," and it cuts to a shot of, no, Dr. Bem looks over and it cuts to a shot of Barbie Benton, you know, behind the screen, changing, and it's like, why cut to that shot, and why say, "Take a look"? It's like, what?
And I love how it's perfectly lit, like a, you know, a perfectly illuminated, so they can see the perfect curves of the outline.
Oh, yeah,
the
like someone just took a light stand and stuck it on the other side of that thing.
Wow, chicka, wow, wow.
And it's like,
well,
so then
I guess I should stick around.
Yeah, well, no, Dr. Saxon is alone, and he does this. Now, she comes in, and then he has her remove her...
Shouldn't there be a female nurse present in the room?
There should be. It sounds like there should be, or at the very least, a chaperone of some sort. But he has her remove her top, even though he's not doing a breast examination. He's doing a...
I'm sorry. your stethoscope not go through a paper pullover?
Now, again, Boaz Davidson, I'll give him credit. He gets Barry Benton to do a topless shot here, so it's very nice. We're not complaining, but nevertheless, everything else about this sequence just feels so wrong.
I love how he says, "Now, take a deep breath."
Yeah, take a deep breath. And you know what?
Slowly.
Slowly. Inhale. Exhale.
One more time.
Inhale one more time.
I'm almost there.
Be funny if he joked and said, "Just letting you know, I'm not really a doctor." So then he draws some blood from her, which is going to get tested, and they have her placed in a room with three older women who look like they should be in an insane asylum. The way how they're talking and the way how they're we talked about this before we started, but the way how they're talking about her and
one is like really silent at first, and it seems like is she like knitting something, or she's staring. She's laying down in her bed,
yeah,
like staring off into space, just like kind of staring at her. And you got the other creepy one just saying weird off the wall shit. And at one point she says, "You know, she's beautiful on the outside, but I bet she's rotten on the inside."
Yeah, like he says, she's real sick on the inside and everything.
I'm like, who the fuck says that? I'm like, and this is what I'm thinking, is this a hospital or is this a mental ward?
Yeah,
and
I don't know.
And if that's the case, and if it's both, then why are you having normal patients that are in there for like an exam or to be, you know, be with the other creepy patients? I'm like,
it's so weird. It's so weird. And then not only that, but then of course the killer kills another nurse who is typing up the test results, so that way they can give the test results to the doctors. And then after this nurse is killed, Harry shows up and finds the test results in the typewriter and, you know, takes them. Conveniently enough, yeah. And then later on, another nurse finds the typist dead. And then I wonder if they were trying to make this an intentional comedy, or, but when he kills this other nurse, the killer, he throws her body on a wheelchair, and then turns the wheelchair around at an open door and just quickly throws it in the other, and then he just starts walking away normal, like, "Oh, nothing to see here," and it's like, what's going on here?
But here's the thing, is he comedically shoves her off screen.
Yes!
You're expecting her to, like, the stare thing. Whoa! Boom, 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 boom.
Exit, like, stage right, you know?
Like, literally exit down the stairs and off the screen. But it was so bizarre. Like, it could have had a laugh track, that scene.
You know what? It would have been much funnier if she came running out screaming down the hallway, and then all of a sudden, a huge cane came out of the doorway and grabbed her by the neck and pulled her in, sort of like that old-fashioned, like, joke being on stage in vaudeville, where if you bombed real bad, someone had, like, that...
You had the hook or something?
Yeah, hook that pulls you out of the way. That... They should have done that in this movie. But the wheelchair sequence is funny as it is.
Yeah.
So
it's like, "Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. Hello,
my time's up. Oh, yeah, yeah. Hello, oh, I'm mommy on stage. I got to get off. Ah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Good job there. Good job there. Next one up." So Harry delivers the test results to the two other doctors, Dr. Saxon and Dr. Bim. And I love how they play this off, because it's like, you know, they're trying to figure out what the diagnosis is, but they never say what it is. And not only that, but Dr. Saxon is like saying, "Oh, well, based off these symptoms, it looks like, you know, this is going to be a death note to her," or whatever it is, you know, "and we got to figure out what to do." And
they kept everything so vague. They used like literally no medical terms, because I don't think they had anybody helping them with the script. It was a doctor, or that was, you know, in the medical field or medical profession at all. They're like,
well, they were trying to make it mysterious. And I'm not even expecting them to use medical terminology. I'm just expecting them to give like a little more of a better idea. Like, does she have cancer? Does she have, or does she have, I don't know, something, some kind of a tumor? I don't know what, you know. Come on, guys, say something.
They keep showing pictures of a bunch of squiggly lines.
I know,
some part of her anatomy.
Is it a gastrointestinal problem? What?
At one point, I thought she had worms in her brain.
I know.
I thought X-ray of her brain. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And you know, Benton's character, Barbie Benton's character, Susan, she's like, I just came in to get my test results because I'm starting and I'm getting promoted at work.
Yeah, and new insurance plan. Yeah, and I gotta say though, you know, considering that this was no acting stretch for Barbie Benton's character, I did feel bad for her because the way how she plays it off like everything is an inconvenience. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she calls home a couple of times saying, yeah, they still got the test results. They can't find my original doctor.
Yeah, meanwhile, her boyfriend's outside still sleeping in the goddamn fucking car.
Oh, we'll get to him soon.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about, like, an empty slate. I mean...
Oh, my God.
But anyways, yeah, so they decide, you know, they still got to keep her. But she still insists that she's doing okay. So... She convinces Harry to go to her original doctor's office to check her previous file. So, he does so. And what I love about this sequence, too, is that when they walk into the doctor's office, and they walk up to the filing cabinet, the key is, like, sitting right up there. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he didn't have to search for it at all.
Yeah, like, why would the doctor, like, keep the key laying around? Because, you know, it's all about security and protocol.
Yeah, especially right next to the filing cabinet it belongs to.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Wouldn't you find that maybe the desk drawer, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, it's a convenience for the story to move along, but I would have at least have had Harry's character, like, rummage through a desk to find the key.
Yeah, scrounge for, you know... 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like you're doing some work.
Yeah, like say, oh, we gotta find the, it's a lock on there, Susan. You know, maybe she's got a key in the drawer. Let's just, you know, rummage around, grab some papers here, and move some shit around. And they're like, here's the key. Let's try it out and see if it works.
Hey, under that coffee cup, there's a key.
Yeah, yeah. Or that would have been funny, too. It's like in like a coffee cup full of pencils and shit, you know, like, oh, there it is right there.
Yeah. You know? Maybe it would say number one doc on the side of the coffee cup.
Yeah. Like if they added shit like that to it, try to create some sense of like, you know, normalcy for that, I would totally have been like, okay, it's fine. But the fact that the key is just sitting right up there on the filing fucking cabinet.
You know what would have been even more convenient? Have the key already in the lock of the filing cabinet.
You know, and here's the other thing, though, too. Plot inconsistencies and, like, weird actions aside, if the story were, like, relatively interesting and they still had these weird things in here, I would really have had no problem with it. But because the whole thing is so fractured and, like I said, so overstated, everything sticks out like, every problem sticks out like a sore thumb. It really does. It's like really hard to avoid the problems. But, so Harry takes a look at the files, and sure enough, it proves exactly what Susan was talking about. So, he's gonna, you know, Harry says he's gonna take care of this. We're gonna get you out in like an hour or whatever the hell he says.
Harry's a big fat fucking liar.
Yeah, well, yeah, as we find out later, but you know, but I will say I like Harry's character at least at this point in the movie because he does come across as fairly reassuring, like okay, we're going to take care of this problem. Something's not quite right. So we'll look into it. So let's see what happens next cuz like I said the whole thing just goes in all sorts of directions. Let's see.
Don't they have to talk to Dr. Rapey?
What's his name? Saxon, yeah.
Dr. Saxon, because doesn't he say that Harry or she spoke to somebody saying that he's got to go to like a special to get the files, and he was all pissed because, oh, what do you mean? Yeah, Harry went to get the files, and that he's.
Oh yes, that's right. So you know,
he's got to go somewhere else. He's got to go up to like some sort of
to the records,
records room or
the records office and. But it's like, but if you're going to go to the records office, why don't you just still take a look at the previous file that they found in her doctor's office? I don't...
It makes no fucking goddamn sense. None of this makes any goddamn sense.
I know, it's
and,
like...
And the fact that this is a hospital, yes, I know, it's at night, I know, but guess what? Chris, you work in a hospital, correct?
Yeah.
There's lights on almost everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the hallways are lit for the most part.
Well,
this is all done in the shadows, and I get it.
Well, they're trying to give it a creepy vibe, yeah.
Well, so. Right, but you can do that. You could you can still create a creepy vibe and still keep some normal semblance of reality. Because right now it's like almost like a Twilight Zone-esque kind of thing. It's not even I get it if they were trying to shoot some sort of dream sequence where everything is supposed to be dark and creepy and just like very foreboding. But this is this should be like a normal night. I mean, and I worked at a convalescent center for a while.
Well, I'll tell you what. I watched this on YouTube. Someone wrote a comment saying that it's that you know for the night shift, it's like it looks like the most unpopulated hospital. Oh. And I was like, well, I've been in the OR department. I work in the OR department, and late at night. And let me tell you, sometimes it does feel unpopular. Like there's not too many nurses around. You know what I'm saying? Because it's late at night. It's third shift type things. You know, the only time you're going to see a couple of nurses is if there's, like, an emergency case or whatever. So, I mean, like, I think that's funny the way how someone said on YouTube, wow, this hospital at night looks totally understaffed.
It's well, like, yeah, well, it is at night.
But
it makes Haddonfield General over it and Halloween 2 look downright populated.
Yeah, but that hospital totally looked. But that hospital totally looked like a real hospital. Okay, compared to this movie, that one looked like it was real. I mean, even that had a security guard for Christ's sake. This movie doesn't
and cameras.
Yeah, this hospital doesn't even have a security guard around.
Yeah.
It's like people could just come and go.
And you think, especially after, you know, that crazy shit that happened, what, a year ago?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, yeah, but, you know, yeah. That's the thing.
They would have some sort of police presence or security presence somewhere.
It was a more. It was an innocent time. No one really thought about that much. But
Halloween 2 came out what 1982, 3?
Yeah, that's true.
This came out 2 years before. I don't know.
Well, that was made by Universal. They were willing to put money into it. This was made by Canon. You know, they were trying.
They could afford a security card or two.
Yeah. Probably not in the budget. Yeah, it's funny. You couldn't afford someone on the crew working as a PA to just like put on a security uniform and just walk around. And look like they're doing some important shit.
Yeah. He says, hey, stop that. And then he gets killed. At least that's something.
Oh, yeah. So, anyways, her boyfriend, Jake, finally wakes up, you know, realizing, hey, you know what? She said she was going to be back in a couple minutes, but it looks like it's been for hours.
Yeah, you know, last time I dropped off, it was 1:30, and now it's now it's 11 o'clock.
And isn't he parked
in the last 10 hours?
And isn't he parked in front of the hospital entrance?
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no way you can get away with that.
So he gets up, he goes in there, he kind of checks in, I guess.
Yeah, and then he gets a phone call from the phone booth, the payphone, I believe it's someone telling him that your wife is on the ninth floor. I wonder. And he goes up there and he finds one of the dead bodies sitting with a knife in it, and the killer appears behind him with a bone saw. And of course, kills him. And then later on, Susan's in her room, and the killer shows up with a box and puts it on the table. I love it too. She's awake and she doesn't turn around to see who's walking in the room. She's
too fixated on the creepy grannies.
Oh yeah. So she turns around. So then once the killer puts the box down and walks out of the room, she turns around and she opens the box, and there's her. You know. Boyfriend's head in the box, you know?
What's in the box?
Yeah. Is this a precursor to Seven, I think? So,
maybe that's where Seven got the idea.
It could have. So she runs into the doctor's lounge, and the doctor, Dr. Saxon, of course, takes her back, and the box is not there, of course, no matter how many times she tells him.
She runs down the hall screaming, and they find her in some lounge or some other area she tried to block herself into, right?
Yes,
and
yeah.
They end up taking her back and strapping her down and trying to sedate her for the second time.
Right, but then later on, she tries to escape again, and then the killer is there, and she hides behind one of the...
Oh, was this the first or second time? What was
no,
the
this
time
is
the, she
no,
was
no,
strapped
no,
down? They actually
no,
had
no,
to
no,
no,
no. That
com-
that that comes later.
Okay,
they take her back to her room, and then she tries to escape again, and she ends up in this hallway, and the killer is there, and she hides behind that thing that she was, I forget what it's called.
Yeah,
but,
a privacy curtain. Or
yeah, yeah, yeah.
For lack of a better term.
Yeah, and she's got a lighter with her that she drops, and it makes a loud sound, and the killer hears it. Now, here's the part of the movie where I was like, okay, again, the logistics in this sequence are, like, completely off the rails. Lighter falls on the floor.
Clink, clank.
Yeah, yeah. He walks towards where the noise is coming from. Barbie Benton's character uses her foot to try to get the lighter, okay? And she manages to get it, but the killer walks right by her, and you would think he would have turned and looked right toward her, because he was, like, right in the vicinity of her face in
right.
that shot.
Well, there's that, like, 6 or 7 inch gap where you could just see the eyes.
Yeah.
Or, and you know, maybe the top of your forehead.
Right.
Yeah, and he walks right past her, doesn't see her.
Plus,
even
she's,
though it's plain as day.
Yeah, and she's sticking her foot out, like, really far. I mean,
right,
even,
right,
I mean, you would still see that.
Yeah, let's talk about the slow-mo that they actually had. It almost was almost like a student film, almost. You told, like, the actor to walk slow.
Yeah.
Very slow, and you got Barbie Benton, you know, out there with her slipper trying to get the lighter.
Yeah.
And he stops, and the lighter almost, like, I think it doesn't, it, like, tap his shoe or his boot, and she pulls it back, and he keeps walking.
I know.
And then turns around. I'm like, there is no way. This guy would have seen her, you know, 5 miles away. I mean, like, that is completely tell someone's behind there. And yet, it just, the way that the shots they use, the angles they use, especially for the lighter and the shoe, it looked so bad.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, she ends up down in the archive room where Dr. Saxon's looking up her other previous files.
And okay, so I get the hallways being dark, okay,
mm-hmm.
to a certain degree because it's nighttime. Why does he have to have all the lights off in the archive room when he's looking for paperwork? Shouldn't it be bright as fuck in there? I mean,
yeah,
all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like he needs a fucking, like, it's like almost like the young Frankenstein where he needs a fucking, like, a little lamp with a light, like, with a candle on, trying to find
yeah.
the secret passageway. I'm like, what are you doing?
And of course, the killer has a little hatchet-like thing, so of course he kills Dr. Saxon, and of course Susan witnesses it, and she goes back to her room, but unfortunately the nurses don't listen, and that's when they finally strap her into table, and then I'm trying to see. Oh, and then of course the other doctor, Dr. Bem, the surgeon, waltzes in and announces that he has to perform surgery on her because the illness she has is just making her go crazy. I don't know how the surgery is going to take care of that problem.
Yeah, and the fact that he diagnosed it so quickly, he's like,
I know,
we're
yeah.
having surgery right now. No, and it feels like he almost threatened her, too. He's like, either you calm down right now, or we're going to cut you open. We're going to perform surgery on you.
I know. It's again.
Like, what?
Yeah, the logic
is just. Threaten you with surgery because you won't calm down?
And then of course, the killer now is pretty much on a rampage. At one point in the movie, I was kind of confused by this death sequence. He kills one of the nurses. He, like, it's actually kind of neat how they did it. He comes walking down the hallway holding a sheet over his him with the lighting, and it worked pretty nicely. And then he covers her with the sheet, and then he pulls out this syringe and stabs her with it, but he injects it in her, and I'm like, well, what did he... Did he inject oxygen into her, the killer, or did he inject a poison? I mean, you couldn't tell.
Well, it looked like a dark formula of some sort because
yeah,
you know,
but like,
injecting
but,
oxygen would look clear.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm like, but then she dies, and I'm like, well, what?
Right.
You know, did he like give her VD? Oh, Valentine's Day. Anyways,
here's the thing: is that why it was a great shot to see him coming?
Yeah,
her reaction to it all. Is completely like she took forever. Like, oh my god, no!
I know.
Like,
yeah, they
running down the hall. I'm like,
they stretched that out, man.
Fucking take. I'm taking off, man. I am like pulling a Jesse Owens, and I'm down the hallway. You know,
right?
You know, 3.5 seconds.
And then the Dr. Bem character, he's I thought this was pretty nicely played off. It was, you know, he's like washing his hands, prepping for the surgery, and then all of a sudden a saw blade comes out through his neck from behind him. And that actually was a pretty cool little moment. I think that was probably one of the more successful death sequences in this film. But so then, of course,
damn those privacy curtains, because I think they went right through a privacy curtain too.
I know, but like I said, I would say that's probably one of the more successful death sequences in this movie.
Yeah.
So then, the killer then finally wheels out Susan on the gurney and places her on the operating table, and he's about to do some, you know, serious operating here.
And where is this operating room at? In the basement? Because it doesn't look like an operating
room.
Yeah,
it totally feels like it's somewhere sketchy. You know, maybe back alley kind of stuff. But but then as we... So she manages to tear off the killer's... The surgical mask. And who's the killer there, Timmy?
It's Harry. Harry Warden. No, it's Harry.
Yeah, and... I have to say, that had to have been the dumbest reveal ever, because if you go back to when the nurse was typing the symptoms, typing the results for the blood test, you know, and that's supposed to be Harry that killed her, but then later, when Harry walks in there, you know, without the mask on, acting all normal, and grabbing the paper and walking away, and it's like, so does he have a split personality disorder in this movie, because he's acting completely normal?
So is this My Bloody Valentine?
No, I mean, like he's acting like, I better walk in here like I normally do in case anybody else walks in here and wonders what's going on, you know? And then when he takes the test results, you know, to the other two doctors, and there was that one scene where they're trying to figure out, you know, when the one guy says this is basically a the symptoms don't add up, but it's basically a death sentence for her.
Right.
Then it cuts to the other nurse finding the dead receptionist, and then the killer is there. So it's like, it makes it look like Harry just managed to somehow quickly get out of that office, put that mask on, and just kill another person. I mean, the way how it's edited and how it's played off, the killer reveal doesn't really work. It just, if you go back and watch it, you know what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, when you look at it that way, it's like, it really doesn't add up at all that this guy would be the killer. I mean, literally. I mean, it really doesn't.
No.
Just because you have him say, I'm Harold, it's like, well, yeah, but all the other stuff that happened previously, you know, doesn't add up to the reveal now. It really doesn't.
I would have a better inkling that it would be her ex-husband that would be the killer.
Yeah, like he somehow managed to like not use a name. But then even that would have been a stretch too. Like somehow she married a guy that managed to change his name identity, and then all of a sudden... I mean, actually, you know what? That actually wouldn't have been a bad idea.
Didn't they try to do that with Valentine? Seriously?
Yeah, they did. Okay, yeah, you're right. They did.
David Boreanaz was the, he was the killer. Spoiler.
So you know what? I take it back. I think they should have had it been the ex-husband. It really should have been. It should have been him, goddammit. Goddammit.
He had facial reconstructive surgery.
Well, or better yet, just, you know, the kid disappeared, no one ever saw the kid again, years later, you know, maybe she met this guy in college, didn't recognize him because he looks a little different, you know, who put it together, you know?
Yeah, you just described the whole plot of Valentine, dude.
Oh, yeah, I did, but I'm certain...
at least the background story for the killer.
Okay, but I am willing to bet my bottom dollar that you and I and Mark and Dave would probably have come up with a better... You know,
hands down,
nuts and bolts way of how to pull it off.
In one evening, we could probably crank that out.
Yeah, and you know, and believe me, we're not priding ourselves. At least I'm not. At least I'm not. But I think
But here with this movie, the bar has been set extremely low.
Yeah, I think we could have set the bar extremely high for this movie. Unfortunately, I was born in 1984, so it was too late to help these people out. So it's Harold, and you know, Harold, and doesn't Harold say like he wants, you know, what he's always wanted is what?
No, she asked him, well, what do you want? what I've always wanted, Susan, your heart.
Oh, wow. Cliche 101. Holy shit.
Oh, my God. So, but who decides to show up in the nick of time to help save the day?
Oh, the creepy three ladies. My God. They look like they should be from Macbeth, for Christ's sake. I mean,
Dr. So-and-so, is that you? What are you doing?
I they should have had them standing there stirring a cauldron, for Christ's sake.
So, anyway, with that simple distraction, she grabs, like, a scalpel or whatever it is and stabs him in the abdomen.
Yeah.
Now, what happens next, oh, my God, it's enough to, like, send the ridiculous factor off the scales. All right, so this guy's got a gut wound. I mean, like, literally the knife or the scalpel is sticking out of his stomach.
Yeah.
Yet somehow he's able to run. Not walk, not walk, not jog, but full-on almost run.
Yeah.
And he's dripping blood and everything like that. They end up in what was it? Another archives room or something, right?
It's probably a specimen room because she drops or she throws some kind of liquid on him. It could be formalin or something or whatever.
You know, it was a flammable liquid. It was this big jar of flammable whatever the hell it is. But here's the thing: is if it's on a shelf somewhere, it's got a lid. It's got something that is just an open container. I'm like. I don't work in a hospital, but usually if something's flammable or something's, you know, highly, you know, potent, shouldn't there be a fucking lid on it? I mean, now I get if she if she picked it up and she threw it at him and it smashed all over his body, that makes sense.
Unless one of the nurses accidentally left the lid off, who knows?
but she's crawling up the ladder. And
I know.
Kind of dumps on his head. I'm like, okay. Oh.
But it serves a purpose because once when they get to the top of the roof, and of course Harry attacks her. Luckily for her, she had that lighter on her.
Exactly. Where did she store that lighter? Because she's like in her panties and a paper gown. There's no pockets in a paper gown, right? I'm like.
Well, I mean, if it's a.
I don't know.
You know what? I'm not going to ask any more questions.
I don't know. I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate here. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I've worn a paper gown a couple of times. I don't recall them having any pockets or.
Yeah. So where do you think she hid it? Do you think it was like a like a women in prison type thing where they had the. God, I don't want to say it. I don't want to say it.
Are you saying she's doing her Kegels?
Probably. But anyways. We'll let the imagination run wild there. But, no, so she lights him on fire.
Impressive.
She lights Harry on fire. And I gotta say, I actually like the way how it ended, because he's, like, on fire, and he falls over the side, and his body just goes hurling over, and then he lands on the concrete and is just dead. It's like just a giant stud.
Like a sack of dog shit that's laying on fire. Yeah. At somebody's doorstep. But what happens next is even more hilarious.
Yeah.
It's like it's a cut to the next morning. Everything's serene. La da da da. She walks out and there's her daughter and her ex-husband and they hug and they embrace and then they walk
I know.
And they roll credits. I'm like, "What the fuck just happened?"
I was sitting there like, "So what? She now likes her ex-husband again and she's happy to see him?"
There's no explanation to this doctor that just it was lit on fire and off the roof. There's no ambulances. There's no police
around. There's no reporters. There's no question asking. She just leaves the hospital. Like, okay, I finally got my test results. Everything is resolved. You know,
right? And you know, my ex-husband, my boyfriend's. You know, I just found his head in the box. And
but I have my ex-husband to embrace me, and it's like. God damn it. Who wrote this again?
I'm so happy to see you. And then credits, starring, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. I'm like, what the fuck just moved?
I exploded in laughter when I saw that. I was like, what?
I'm literally laying
it's like
couch,
a bad like, joke.
Yeah, no, Chris, I'm literally laying on the couch. And I'm looking. I'm like, what the fuck was that? What just happened? It's like they just run out of money and it's like, well, that's the end of the story. It's like, okay.
It's what it feels done. Like. I mean,
everybody go home.
It feels like it, man. I mean, oh, God. Oh. Like I said, the only good virtue this movie has is the music score by Arlen Ober. That's the only good virtue this movie has. Well, and Barbie Benton. But, you know, it's. All right, you know what? Like I said, I'm not a big fan of remakes, but if there's one movie that should be remade, it should be this one. It really should be. Like, I'd like to see them, like, try to do something else with this movie?
I'm not for sure, but I thought there was something in production called Ward 13 that was a remake or something. Now, I don't remember what it was, but they did have do you remember the movie we reviewed a few years ago for Christmas, All Throughout the House?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I believe it was the star of that movie. She was supposed to be star of this movie, and it was her brother was going to write it and direct it. But I don't know if it's fallen through or whatever. I don't know what happened, but it was supposed to be called Ward 13. But there was nothing else other than that. You know, it was supposed to be take place in a hospital, a remake of another slasher movie. So I don't know. At one point there could have been, but I'm not 100% sure.
Well,
it could have been a brand new feature, just called the same, you know, thing.
Yeah. At any rate, I'd still like to see someone tackle this movie story and like improve on it greatly. It's God, this is like one Valentine's gift that is just
you don't have the receipt, you can't return it, sorry.
I know. Yeah, it's like coming home from a bad date and you just sit there and you have your hands over your head and you're like, oh my God. Like I said, I wish we could find some virtue in this movie, but we most of the criticisms are us just making jokes about how wrong it is.
Yeah, I mean, you had Dr. Rapey, who just gave her the most, made me feel uncomfortable with the exam. And there was only two shining aspects.
I found that exam sequence to be quite accurate, Tim. And
you're a dirty, filthy liar, Chris.
Well, I found the topless part to be the only accurate part of this movie, but
I liked what I saw.
Yeah, just, me too.
But it just made no goddamn sense.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting too. Like I said, we're reviewing a slasher movie, so most people would think, "What were you guys expecting? Realism?" And my answer is no. But I expect some sense of coherency behind some of it. You know what I'm saying? Like we mentioned, Halloween 2, the hospital setting in that movie is like 10 times more coherent than this movie, because it just feels like, you know, there was like focus and care put into it. This movie, it just feels like they're just randomly guessing shit.
We didn't even touch upon what we talked about before recording here, is that the point where Barbie Benton's character is actually running through the hospital, and she runs into that one room, and there's these three guys in traction, complete body cast, going screaming like, "Oh, you scared me! Oh, get out of here!" Like,
that's right, and you know what?
That?
I know, and that again, it's like one of those scenes where you sit there and go, "Is this supposed to be funny or is it supposed to be serious?" But you know what would have been much better with that sequence? Remember the three guys with the gas masks that were telling her not to go on the floor? It would have been funny if it was those three guys, but they got hurt, and they're in body casts, and if they were wearing the gas masks over their faces.
Yes.
Like, it would have been perfect, because it was three guys. It was three guys up in the ninth floor fumigating, and it's three guys in casts, you know?
And there's three women, too.
Yeah,
it's the rule of threes for some reason. This
I know.
Hospital.
it's the rule of threes. Oh God, but yeah, it's a movie that certainly has not aged well. It definitely falls in that category of one of those cheesy slasher movies that really just doesn't work at all. I would say if you watch this movie, you need to watch it for a pretty amusing laugh, but besides that, it's very forgettable.
Well, and now, as you know, that Chris mentioned he watched this movie on YouTube. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can watch this movie for free, because honestly, that's the only way to go.
Mm-hmm. And I do know that at one point, Scream Factory released X-Ray on Blu-ray as a double feature along with another slasher film called Schizoid with Klaus Kinski, I believe, and, you know, I was thinking maybe about picking that up, but then after seeing this, it's like, well, you know, I'm gonna kind of leave that where it should be.
Ooh, maybe there's director's commentary, though.
I hear there's an interview with Boaz Davidson on it, but, you know, I can only imagine what his defense of the movie. what his defense would be. So
it was fantastic. It was the best thing I ever did.
But it's so funny though, you know, like watching it now, it's like I'm wondering if back then, I mean, I'm certain critics probably picked up on it, but I'm wondering if even back then, you know, the viewers picked up its deficiencies, you know what I'm saying? Like the things that really don't work.
Well, you know,
I mean, it's certainly tailor made for like the drive-in 42nd Street crowd, but at the same time,
oh, for sure, for sure. And being in the early 80s, being when they shot this was probably
81. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it came out in 81, but maybe they shot it in 80 or 81, because I'm sure there wasn't a lot of, you know, production value. They probably shot the whole thing in 3 weeks, it's just. I don't know what the mentality was. I mean, right now, it's a parody of itself. It's cliche.
Back then,
there were at that point there was really no cliches just yet. There was only there were slasher movies, but there wasn't like thousands of them as the 80s progressed.
Yeah, it really proliferated in the mid to late 80s, and then by then you could say that it's. The cliches really, really, really began the show, sure. but you know,
not to say this didn't have any cliches because it did.
And I gotta tell you, you know, even let's say if this movie was shot in 3 weeks, you know, good movies can be shot in 3 weeks, and then there's movies like this that, you know, probably right. wasn't very good. It isn't very good.
Did I say 3 weeks? I meant 3 hours.
Well, that would have just been impossible. So, yeah. there's not much else I can add about this movie. I can't recommend it as a good movie, but I could recommend it if you want a little bit of a laugh. So, I mean, it's not a good movie at all. But
yeah, I mean, there are better. Horror comedies are out there than this.
Yeah, or just better Valentine's slasher movies. And, you know, we named two of them.
Yeah. Yes, and I can't believe that. I can honestly say that there's actually Valentine actually beat out another movie.
I mean, at least this movie kept our attention. I mean, like, even if the plotting wasn't very good, even if, you know, not everything about it was great, you know, we still had something to talk about. I mean, we had something to talk about with Valentine, but we talked about just how awfully uninteresting it was. You know what I'm saying? This movie, not quite interesting, but enough to, like, make us, enough to have stupid moments in it for us to go, you know, how much we laughed at how awful that was. Whereas with Valentine, we were just, like, constantly ragging on it just by how, like, non-entertaining it was, so...
Oh, no, you'll get no complaints from me there, or... yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean... I'm sorry, go ahead, dude. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying, I can't honestly, for me, say which is better. To me, they were both a tie. They both sucked and were entertaining for various reasons. I don't see a rewatch value in this or the other film from last year. I know that's really horrible to say, but I mean, Barbie Benton's character is definitely something to watch. I mean, she is very pretty, and especially back in her heyday.
Yeah, and she tried her best, you know. But you know what, Tim? Like all like movies of this type, not all of them are winners, and this one is not one of them.
I don't give it a thumbs down because there is some stuff. Even some of the kills are pretty decent, but yeah, the logic behind everything is just bananas, even for a slasher film. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. So I guess it's a thumbs in the middle for me.
Yeah, same here. Like I said, I can't recommend it as a good movie, but I can certainly recommend it as something for you to have a laugh at on a rainy day. So.
Yeah, yeah. If you got 90 minutes to kill,
yeah.
at an airport,
yeah. So go for it. But I don't have. Do you have any fun facts, Tim, or is this one of those forget it type stories? Yeah.
Ooh, wouldn't that be so easy? No, I got 5 fun facts.
Oh no, go for it.
So number one, this is just briefly touching upon what you talked about, but also expanding on it. According to the interview with director Boz Davidson on the Region 1 Shout
factory DVD Blu-ray release. The set was crowded on the day that Barbie Brenton's nude scene was shot. So, yeah. Everybody wanted to be a part of that.
Everybody wanted a part of the action.
Number two, the film was shot at night in an actual abandoned hospital. Number three, I found this one hilarious. Boz Davidson was a last-minute replacement for the original director, who got fired after he failed to provide some money that he promised to put into the production of the film. Wow.
Ooh.
It's really funny. If that doesn't set off alarm bells.
Yeah, problems.
Number four, rushed into production to capitalize on the slasher boom of the early 80s. Number five, fifth and final one, Jane, who plays young Harry, and Elizabeth Hoy, who plays young Susan, appear together as murderous children in Bloody Birthday, the same year they appeared together in X-Ray. Hmm. So there you go.
Yeah.
Those are your five fun facts.
Yeah, and I've seen X-Ray. Bloody Birthday, too. It is also not a good movie. So
Ooh, two for two.
I think we've exhausted as much detail on X-Ray, and I think our verdict is in, so... Tim, you got anything else you want to add?
Well, just thanks for tuning into our VD episode, and we'll hope you'll join us again. So stay tuned to our official Twitter and Facebook pages for updates on our next episode, which we are in the process of firming up the details as we speak. Happy Hallmark holiday, everyone. Valentine's Day. We hope every one of you gets laid. Take care and good night.
And don't forget to get your shots, everybody.
Yeah. Good night.
Poor Ralph. Here you go, Ralph. You choose me? Happy Valentine's.
Thanks for listening to our latest episode here at the Speakeasy Podcast Network. If you'd like to contact us, you can at thathorrorshowpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We can be found on Facebook at That Horror Show Podcast, as well as the official Speakeasy Podcast Network Facebook page. So be sure to give us both your likes so you can keep up to date with us and all the other wonderful podcasts at the Speakeasy Podcast Network. We are also on the Twitter machine at That Horror Show 1. And you can also follow the Speakeasy Podcast Network's Twitter handle at TheSpeakeasyPO1. And finally, if you do the gram, the Instagram that is, you can find me at Tim at That Horror Show Podcast. Thanks.
Well, that's the end of the episode.
Thank you for listening.